Won't you lead me there? Oh, skylight, I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them.
Jackie Paris released 5 albums on his own and worked with some of the biggest names in jazz: Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Charles Mingus. But commercial success always seemed to be just beyond his reach. Joining me now is Raymond DeFelitta, the writer and director of Tis Autumn, The Search for Jackie Paris, a documentary about Paris's career. It opens today at the Village East Cinema, and I'm delighted that it brings Raymond DeFelitta to the show. Hello.
Hello. It's actually the Cinema Village.
Cinema Village. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
When did you first hear Jackie Paris sing?
Well, this all started in the early 1990s when I was a professional jazz pianist myself, and I one night on the radio heard the record that he made with Mingus, which is called Paris in Blue. And it's a fascinating record. It's a kind of a period avant-garde beatnik theater, I think Phil Schaap calls it. And Jackie, in the record, introduces himself. He says, "Hey, everyone, I'm Jackie Paris, and I sure got the blues." And the name, I didn't know who he was. I thought it was a singer who they made up the name for, because it sounds, if you think of it, like what a Pulp Fiction novelist might invent as a name for a jazz singer, Jackie Paris. So I looked into it. I started asking people who this was and what this strange record was. And eventually a jazz musician friend of mine said, "No, he's one of the greatest, and it's very hard to find his material."
Probably was Jackie Parisi when the family came over. And he could have had a career a la the other Italian crooners, from Frank Sinatra to Jerry Vale. But he became very interested in the new modern jazz.
Yeah, he was a hardcore bebopper, and he loved it. He was there at the birth of it, and those guys, Bird and Dizzy, they all caught on to him and his talent right away. Mingus clearly thought that Jackie Paris was the guy to put over that complicated and strange recording that I heard years ago. And I think the interesting thing about Jackie, as you say, he could have had that other career. He almost did, really, because in addition to being a bebopper, he was really a wonderful balladeer. And he could sing as sweetly as anyone.
And his biggest hit, we heard a little bit of, Skylark,
yeah,
which was a hit. It actually made the charts.
Yeah, and it was, Hoagie Carmichael often said it was his favorite recording of it. It was, like most of Jackie's success, though, it remained kind of inside the music business. The people with big ears, as they'd say, you know, all knew that was a super recording. But it wasn't a chart topper.
Well, you've made films in the past, but they've all been fiction films. Why make a documentary? Was it your hope to revive interest in Jackie Paris through this film?
Well, you know, at first when I met Jackie, which is 3.5 years ago now, I just wanted to document him. I knew that he wasn't well. I didn't even think he was alive. In fact, there was a book that said that he had died in the late 70s, and so for years I didn't think he was alive at all. But he was, in fact, trying to launch a comeback. And I had such a feeling of having found a kind of lost legend that I just said to him, "I want to know your life story, and I want to hear it firsthand, and I'd like to tape it."
Was it hard tracking him down?
Well, no, because he was here in New York at the Jazz Standard. I would open the New Yorker magazine one night and suddenly saw the name of someone who I thought had been dead for 20 years. So.
The Jazz Encyclopedia had him dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the standard reference work.
And there's something about Jackie's life that, I mean, that just fits, you know, his kind of luck ran that way.
When you spoke to other people, were they eager to talk about him?
Yeah, there were really only a couple of people, and I think that it had more to do with the fact that, you know, sometimes older people prefer to push ahead. But I really only got a couple of turndowns. People thought the world of him, and they also knew that he'd kind of gotten a raw deal, so they were interested in the fact that I wanted to put this much effort into reviving his interest in him.
Well, how much of it was a raw deal, and how much of it was Jackie Paris's own making? I mean, he was a difficult person, wasn't he?
So they say. He was nothing but nice with me. But as we started, you know, to interview more people, and as the story of his life began to get pieced together, I found that there were, you know, 2 or 3 parallel things working against him having the career that he wanted, and one of them was the fact that he was very exacting. He was a perfectionist, and he could he had a hair trigger temper. So if he didn't like something, he wasn't necessarily the most diplomatic guy in the room. You know, when it came to getting what he wanted, he was very demanding, and you can get away with that if you're Frank Sinatra. But he didn't have that success.
Well, you even have a story in the film about him filling a club for a full week, but getting into a fight with the club owner and never being invited back.
Yeah, that was Tavern on the Green, in fact. He did sell it out, and he didn't come back.
Was race an issue? Because Charlie Parker and Charles Mingus, as you say, worked with him at a time when racial lines were much more of a problem in jazz. They obviously just liked the singing, but there were strong distinctions between the white musicians and the black musicians in the 40s.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, I never thought about it in terms of that, because Jackie was obviously, you know, very colorblind, and he worked across the boards with everyone. But there may be something in what you're saying, because, you know, Billy Eckstine really gets all of the credit for being the jazz singer who broke through in the 40s, and I think Jackie was really there a beat before Billy Eckstine. In fact, when I listen to Jackie, I also think I hear what Mel Torme listened to and later was able to achieve more popular success with than Jackie.
When you met him, didn't he already know that he had terminal cancer?
Yeah, he was ill with bone cancer when we met, and was very upfront with me about it, as I think, you know, one must get at that stage, yeah.
Are there questions that you wish you would have been able to ask him, things that you discovered after he died?
Well, I don't want to be glib about that, because yes and no, I guess, is the answer, though. There were things that I would have loved to have gotten into with him, more having to do with his family, because he had a lot of unresolved issues in his personal life, and I think that it pained him a lot. I found out about most of those, though, after his death. The question is, would I really have been able to look him in the face and ask him those questions? I don't know.
For example, he denied having children. He had at least one and maybe two.
Yeah, there might be more. I think that it's probably the thing that made him saddest in his life. And I had to kind of look back and, you know, kind of piece that part of his life together. But it was something that he didn't want to talk about. And on the other hand, when I looked at some of the last tapes when we spoke, he talked around the subject of family a lot. Also,
at the end, even though he could have finally come out and told the story.
I found out about it before he died. I was not able to ask him that, though.
He must have had regrets about a number of things, especially the way he handled his relationship with Anne Marie Moss.
Yeah, Anne Marie Moss is a wonderful singer, and she's still with us. She and Jackie had an act in the 60s and 70s. It was sort of a Jackie and Roy type duo act, and a very inventive arranger as well as a wonderful female singer. She and Jackie had a very stormy 20-year marriage. They worked together. They lived together in a tiny tenement on the east side. They toured the Playboy clubs all over the place, barely scratching out a living. They were recorded once, and it was by someone who bootlegged it. In other words, they didn't go into the studio. Someone just recorded them in a club, and that's all we have of them. And it's a shame. You know, one of the rare pieces, there's very little of Jackie out there, one of the rare pieces of video footage that I found was an appearance they made on a Mike Douglas TV show.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it's quite a period piece, yeah. It's from 1975, I think.
You went with him to Nutley, New Jersey, where he grew up. Had it changed much from the old days?
No, in fact, it was kind of an astonishing experience, because he took us to his childhood home, his cousin's home across the street, and we walked into the backyard. We didn't knock on the door or ask permission of whoever owned it at the time, and he said, "There's a well back here," and indeed, there's an old well sitting there. No one had moved it. Nutley is a lovely town and very very much kind of a period place too. That was an interesting event. It kind of caps the film, because it was Jackie's last visit to his home, and it was, I think, as close as he was able to get to some reconciliation with his past.
And people recognized him, even though he might have been able to walk down a New York street, Manhattan Street, he lived in Manhattan for so many years, and not be recognized.
Well, he was a local hero in Nutley. As a kid, he was a performer and won a lot of local amateur contests, and so he was, in fact, there's really two local Nutley heroes, Jackie and the actor Robert Blake.
And we know what happened to Robert
Blake.
Exactly. Was his family glad to see him?
Yeah. What family he had left, you know, clearly, I mean, and I say this as an Italian, you know, it's a very important bond in that culture. So, he was a mass of contradictions. He was not a typical family man, obviously, but he did stay in touch with his cousins, and he did want to see them one last time. And I think he knew that was going to be the last visit, which we got on film.
I'm talking with filmmaker Raymond DeFelitta about his latest film, Tis Autumn, The Search for Jackie Paris, which opens today at the Cinema Village on 13th Street between 5th Avenue and University Place. Was making a documentary all that different from the other films that you've made?
Yeah, well, really what making a documentary is more akin to writing a film rather than making a narrative film. You're writing it as you go, really. You're finding out the story while you're shooting. It was a great experience for me because it was really the most personal event in filmmaking in my life. And, you know, you're not really encumbered with much. We went out and just got video cameras and just kept shooting, and it didn't really cost much to do. In some ways, I like to think of it as a home movie. And it has that kind of a quality. We just wanted it to be a very modest, real look at something that, and it's a subject that I was always interested in, beyond it being about Jackie, the subject being the nature of fame in our culture.
Also, the 50s. Is it a coincidence that three of your movies are set in the 1950s, largely?
I even have a pile more scripts set in the 40s and 30s.
You're too young to be obsessed with that time.
I was clearly born into the wrong era. From the moment I started hearing jazz when I was a kid, I suddenly felt at home in the 1930s and 40s and 50s. It's just what I'm into. It's just what I like.
Are you still playing piano?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we had a little party for the film the other night, and I played with a trio, and it was a wonderful experience. I said to someone that next day, I know how to have these kind of events. If you play at them, you don't have to socialize at all.
You'd have to go around in glad hand.
Yeah.
If people are interested in hearing Jackie Paris's music, are there any records available these days?
Yeah, if you go on the internet, I mean, it's considerably easier now to find him than it was when I started, basically because there was no internet then.
You got to go to the internet. You can't go into J&R or
no,
another
record store. I don't think you'll find anything out there. Apparently, Verve did re-release his greatest album, The Song is Paris, which was really his last great album, made in 1961, I think. Apparently, that's back out, and you can find the Japanese companies reissued his earlier albums on CD, and you can find them. You have to search them out. I hope that if enough people see the movie, I hope that finally a record company would be interested in putting it all together, because there's a finite amount of Jackie. It's not even going to be, you know, a 10-box set. There's maybe 5 or 6 CDs to put out there.
But a number of really important musicians involved beyond Jackie Paris, you'd think, for history's sake alone.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty terrific singer.
I think he's marvelous. You know, he's a kind of singer, too. He's unique, and that sound doesn't necessarily translate for everyone. There are people for whom it's just not their thing, but I find him, just his range, too, the fact that he's a wonderful blues singer, that he's a balladeer, that he can, you know, be a real hardcore bop singer, that's a combination of talents very few singers have.
Raymond DeFelitta's film, Tis Autumn, The Search for Jackie Paris, is opening today at the Cinema Village on 13th Street between 5th Avenue and University Place. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've had a heck of a run on the way. It's been laughs, it's been kicks, it's been fun on the way. Any time that I cried, my tears soon were dried. Thanks to somebody's helping hand.